the voice acting is really, really top notch. The girl that they got to do Lara Croft.
Hey, Camilla, gentlemen podcast. Dude,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Gentlemen podcast.
All right, welcome to Rated NA, episode number 99, the podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com. We are finally back after PAX. We ran a kind of a special episode where we replayed the panel that our own Hillary was part of called Romance. I just blanked on the title, in games.
Foreplay, romance, and games.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So yeah, but we are short one member. Hillary couldn't make it today, so it is just Scott, Ash, and myself. How you guys doing?
Sausage party.
It is a sausage party.
Damn.
I thought maybe we could make a concerted effort to limit our dong mentions today.
Okay. No, that sounds good.
Is that good?
Dongmentions.com.
Yeah. Go there.
we can be gentlemen, if you will.
Yeah.
PAX was awesome. Today is actually going to pretty much be all about PAX. We're going to kind of go over a lot of the titles that we got to play. And some of the things that we got to do while we were out there, and some of the adventures we got to take part in. So I think it's going to be a fun episode. If you didn't get to go to PAX this year, you can kind of live vicariously through our PAX East adventures.
Indeed.
Let's do the rundown.
Today on the podcast, we're going to talk about PAX. So we played a whole bunch of games. We met friends, sang songs, ate pizza.
We did.
Had all kinds of good times. We danced a little bit. Maybe we'll talk about that.
I think we may have infected all of PAX with the PAX pox, too.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think there was a cloud of PAX pox that landed on everyone on Saturday.
That may have been it, because literally everybody got sick.
Yeah.
Even people that were like immune. I'm immune. I never get sick. Like a week later, they're like dying.
It was probably one of those parties that was like where Patient Zero started. I'm not going to name names. But anyways, we're going to talk about some of the things we did and games we played. And then in our Naquato, which is PAX inspired, did you attend PAX, GDC, or WonderCon? If so, what were some of your best memories? Do tell. I have some memories too.
I kind of remember it.
Yeah.
It went by very quickly, but we have memories to share.
Indeed. So, Matt, what's been going on? It's been you were gone for a week.
I was up in the Northeast, the great wild yonder.
Neat.
Working, and I worked a lot, and as we all always do. Mm-hmm. And I have been playing a ton of Nimble Quest on the iPad. Which hopefully I will write up soon. It's the new game from the guys, I think the same guys that made Tiny Tower. And it's like this crazy old school styled RPG, but you control it in the same fashion that you controlled the game Snake that you used to play, like on your fucking TRS-80, or not TRS, TR-80. My brain is...
TI-85?
That's the one I was looking for. And it's completely addicting. I'm playing just tons of it. It's like the thing I play when I'm waiting for people to play Hero Academy, essentially. Scott and slowest one ever. And also, can we just now name our friend Fluid Fire, who frequently comments on the site? She is clearly the winner of Hero Academy.
Yeah.
Period.
She is like the champion of Hero Academy.
Ridiculously good at it.
She totally sandbagged me too.
I never got to play against Amanda. I never got to play against her.
She plays super fast, which is awesome, because you kind of like a game will get go every once in a while. We'll catch each other where we're both not apparently doing anything, and the game we'll play like half of a game just in one setting. But she's so much better than me at it. It's ridiculous. She slaughtered my team at one point, and I guess she probably had like 10 guys still on the bench. And like, she kills my last guy and literally comments, "Oh my god, I didn't know that was the end. I figured you still had like 6 guys you were hiding from me." And I was like, "Nope, you killed me quickly."
Oh man. She totally hustled me too. She's like, "I'm not going to be very good at this." And I was like, "I'm not very good anyways." So here we go.
Wait, she sounds a little bit like an old lady man.
I don't know why I give her that voice. That's, That's quite a disservice to
Does
do
she
that.
Have teeth?
Yes.
But yeah,
just
so
kidding, Amanda. We
so,
love you.
Yeah, I know. It's awesome. She's fun to play with. But so tons of Hero Academy, tons of Nimble Quest. I don't know if I've been doing much else, traveling and work, and that's about it. But yeah, check out Nimble Quest on the iPad if you can. You should. How about you, Ash?
Well, I did not go to New York after PAX. I came home and kind of sat around feeling disgusting for a couple days. I was kind of sick on Sunday at PAX, but I was trying to hide it from people. It's like when you see those shows where somebody gets a zombie bite and they like quickly pull their shirt over the zombie bite and they're like, I can't show this to anybody or else everybody will run away and no one will want to be around me and they'll just shoot me in the fucking head. So I didn't.
Yeah, by Sunday, I think we would have.
Yeah, you probably should. but I didn't tell anybody that I was feeling as bad as I was. I kind of tried to keep it on the DL, but I was on Dayquil on Sunday, just kind of floating around. Man. Yeah, I was just kind of floating around. And also at PAX, I got my my Amazon account hacked, and somebody charged 16 copies of BioShock Infinite to my credit card.
Ridiculous.
At least they have good taste in the things they steal. Right? So that's all been rectified and fixed, but that was kind of some of the stuff I was dealing with at PAX. When I got back, I was finally able to play through Gears of War Judgment, which I picked up right before I left for PAX. And so my wife and my buddy Derek, who was staying at my place when I got home, we actually played through it in like one sitting, just one whole afternoon. We plopped out and played through the whole campaign.
Please tell me you were all in the living room on different TVs.
We were, yeah.
I was going to say...
It was fucking rad.
We
brought three TVs in and had three Xboxes all hooked up. It was awesome. And we were just like, hand me the snacks. Hand me the snacks. And we'd like wheel over. We didn't even stand up. We'd just wheel over to each other and like hand each other snacks. And like actually, we'd feed them to each other slowly. Like, give me a Cheeto. And then we'd slowly feed each other Cheetos. So after we beat Judgment, I actually played through Tomb Raider also in about one sitting. That was not as a community event. That was just by myself playing Tomb Raider. And it was awesome.
Yeah, it's great.
It was
right?
really good.
It's
yeah,
like
I was totally. Yeah, it was awesome. I like told my wife I was going to leave her for Lara Croft. And she said, that's fine. She said, please leave me.
I'm excited now because like through a generous donation from a friend of the site, from Hillary gave me a copy of Tomb Raider. Yeah. I'm dying to play it. I can't right now until I can. But
it was surprisingly great. The narrative was really solid. The voice acting is really, really top notch. The girl that they got to do Lara Croft.
hey, Camilla, gentlemen, podcast.
Gentlemen podcast. Camilla Luddington is her name. And she did the mocap for Lara Croft and the voice acting, and she did a fucking incredible job.
Yeah, like, it was great.
One of my favorite performances of the year by far so far. And that was great. And I have BioShock Infinite in my hands, but I have not played it yet.
Ooh.
So, yeah, it's next on the list because it's getting crazy reviews. So
crazy.
Yeah. Scott, what about you?
Let's see. Well, I haven't done a whole lot because I've been working on a secret project for the website.
You can probably tell people.
No, it's fine.
Okay.
We're doing, whatever. You'll find out in a couple of days. Yeah, I got a little allergies. I'm feeling a little cranky today, so I'm just trying to hold it all together right now.
Yeah.
On this gentleman's podcast.
I think this won't be a gentleman podcast. What it'll be is just a cranky cast where like all three of us just burst into crankiness for the rest of the podcast.
Yeah. I had a moment today at work where I was like, I'm angry. And the first thing, this is funny. The first thing I thought of was that scene from UHF where Terry had just broken up with George and then he had to go on the next day and do Uncle Nutsy's Clubhouse.
Yes.
And it's like, do 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 do. And he comes out and he's like, "Hey kids, where do you want to go?"
That's right, to Uncle Nutsy's clubhouse. And boy, oh boy, are we gonna have big fun today?
And then, like, the whole thing is, you know what I'm talking about. I'm not going to do the whole scene. I'm just saying that's kind of like expressed my feelings through movies, I think.
No, I totally understand. I think the problem for me is I haven't seen UHF since I was about 10 years old.
Oh.
So that scene, I remember the Conan the Librarian, and I remember the end with Michael Richardson, and that's, I think, all that I remember.
Yeah, I'd realize today that if my brain were one of the levels in Psychonauts, it would just be full of, like, UHF and Goonies references, and then like Transformers, the animated movie. Like, it'd be a terrible level.
I went and saw that with my dad, and I cried in the theater when Optimus died.
I know. Spoilers, come on.
Isn't that movie like 30 years old?
You had time.
oh man, we've all neglected to say we took part in Tabletop Day too.
Oh yeah, we did.
Yeah, that's right.
We I introduced, or not I personally, but myself, my wife, and Ash's wife introduced Ash to Flux, which is a game that we've got to get Scott to play because he's going to fall in love with it. It's we played the pirate version. It's the one I bought at PAX as a gift for my wife, and it's fun, man. Just a constantly kind of rule and goal shifting game that is just really fun to sit around and play real quick games. They last anywhere from like 10 to 30 minutes. They're good. What else did we play? We played Cards Against Humanity.
Oh boy.
Oh boy.
Yep. We learned that Matt is the sickest fuck on the planet because he had like 10 times as many cards as anybody else by the end of the match. We were all counting and I'm like 6. Matt's like 34. Like, wow, you're a deranged individual.
It wasn't that bad. I like to think that I have comic timing, and that's why I got so many cards. But yeah, so it's Cards Against Humanity is kind of the apples to apple, but made by just sick individuals.
Yeah, there's some terrible, terrible cards in there.
I like to think of it as like the radio DJ version of apples to apples.
You mean like the Morning Zoo crew, like version? Yeah,
yeah.
It's even worse than that.
It's pretty
the Howard Stern, like,
yeah,
like the absolute worst you could come up with thrown on a card.
But hilarious. I mean, we were all dying laughing at certain point.
My stomach actually hurt the next day because I was so just laughed for so many hours straight.
It was good. And then we played some Space Team to close it off.
Nice.
Space Team was fun. I really liked it. I mean, I was super tired by the time we played, but if you haven't played Space Team, it's like the ultimate game of verbal Simon. That takes place on a spaceship, I guess, is the easiest.
Which is not exactly tabletop, but kind of is. Because you have to sit around with your friends and play, you know?
I was able to convince a bunch of people that weren't necessarily gamers to play Space Team, and everybody loved it. I think this game is going to spread like the plague.
Yeah.
All right.
It's going to be very popular.
Well, speaking of Space Team, we played a little at PAX.
News.
And we're going to talk about PAX.
News.
I really hope. I hope that did Hillary justice.
No, I think she'll appreciate it.
Cool.
So
first up, we threw a party.
Oh,
we
did.
This is crazy. It was our second pre-PAX party, which I guess has been dubbed the NAP party, Nerd Appropriate Pre-PAX party. We didn't name it that. Somebody out there did. I can't remember who.
Wait,
it was.
It can't be the NAP party because that'd be the Nerd Appropriate Pre-PAX party.
Oh yeah. Well, this is called the NAP.
Yeah, the NAP. Party.
So we threw one of these things, and it was I guess the location was graciously donated to us, which was great. We won't go ahead and give it away for now because we don't want people stealing it from us for next year. But it was a lot of fun. We had I don't know, there were like 50 people in the room at one point, which was great.
Yeah, it was super cool.
Yeah, people that we hadn't met before showing up, and a lot of familiar faces.
Yeah.
Of course, the Press Reset gang was there, and Lynn was there, and geez, so many awesome people.
Yeah. Yes, and thank you for tricking out a significant distance away from the convention center. With you probably had to take a cab or subway, so thanks for taking the time to come over. We really appreciate it. It was awesome.
Yeah, it was awesome. So we were there on Thursday night before PAX for, I don't know, 4-5 hours ish, and
for sure.
It was nice. It was snowing outside a little bit that day, and it was definitely took a little bit of an effort to get out there, but it was great seeing everybody. And we gave out some of our first T-shirts.
Yeah, we're a real thing.
Yeah,
this is really happening.
Almost episode 100, and we're a real thing.
We finally became a real thing. And we definitely talked a bunch after this. This is definitely not going away. We all really enjoyed doing it, so we're gonna figure out how to keep this going every PAX, I think, right?
Mm-hmm. It's good because it gives people a chance to kind of hang out and you know, high five and get to, you know, meet people they haven't met before prior to the big convention. Because once you're on that con floor, or even, you know, walking around the convention center itself, it's really hard to have a nice long conversation, you know?
Yeah, I mean, because I met Nate for the first time that night, and so we are different people, apparently. And
same place, same time.
Yeah, I know. We look different too, but I ran into him on the floor like three times the next morning, and I was like, Nate, and if we hadn't met officially the night before, I probably wouldn't have even known who he was when I walked past. I probably would have, but not exactly, you know.
You guys would have ended up going to all the same things anyways.
Yeah, what exactly.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, so it was really cool. They had a little DJ plan, and the food was awesome, and the Shirley Temples were great for me.
They have that place has good food and really good drink selection. So
yeah,
so. Absolutely. Cool.
Props to that place.
Would you like to get into the games?
Yeah, we played a lot of fucking games, didn't we?
Yeah,
it was kind of crazy.
Pick something and let's do it, man.
All right, so the first thing that I did, Media Hour starts on the Friday morning of PAX, and I didn't have a whole lot of time because I had to go do something at the BioWare base, so I only got to use about half my Media Hour, but I ran into Ubisoft and got to go check out Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag, and it was a video presentation that they put on. So it was the same presentation that most people actually got to see at PAX East, but it was footage that hadn't been seen before. And, you know, it kind of left me very, very impressed and very happy. You can see that the guys that worked on Far Cry 3 definitely helped out with this game because the open worlds just look beautiful. Everything is seamless. There's going to be very little load time. They said you're going to be able to, of course, pilot your own ship, which is going to be like a character in the series now, sort of like the Millennium Falcon, but it's called the Jackdaw. And the Jackdaw, your vessel, is upgradable. You're going to be able to crew it with people from all over the world, I guess. And the people that you crew your ship with can die in battle. And you can actually board enemy vessels and take over their ships and steal stuff from their ships. So it looks awesome. If you're looking for like a pirate simulator, then like Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag is going to be right up your alley.
I just hope that it's an Assassin's Creed game to being a pirate simulator.
I'm glad that you mentioned that. They actually said that they're really trying to rely on stealth a lot again. If you played 3, which I know you did, Scott, and Matt is going to actually 3, stealth doesn't really matter because all you have to do is go and rip a poster board down, and then you can get out of jail free, essentially.
Yeah.
And it also just became a bit of a brawler. Like, you could take on 20 soldiers with very little problem, so you didn't have to be stealthy anymore. From the video, it appears as though they're going to make stealth very important again, which I really like. And already, to be honest, just from the 12 minutes of footage I watched, the new lead has a little bit more charisma than Connor.
Oh.
So I wasn't a big Connor fan. So I was really impressed with Assassin's Creed 4. It was actually one of my favorite AAA things that I saw over the weekend.
Awesome. Cool.
Matt, what did you do with your media hour?
Hey, look, guys, some people go check out video games during the media hour and they run straight to the, you know, name your AAA title booth here. I booked a press viewing of something called the Stinky Footboard.
Nice.
And the Stinky Footboard is a peripheral for PC gaming. Well, really for just the PC, but basically they created it with PC gaming in mind, where it's this kind of, I don't know how big you would say, like, you know those things you use to size your feet in the shoe store?
Mm-hmm.
Those metal things, I don't know if they have them anymore, but they used to, the metal things that you size your feet with?
Yeah.
It's about that size, and then it's mounted on this, like, super heavy-duty plastic, and it pitches four ways, so it'll pitch right, left, front, and back. And you can either play it with 2 feet on it, like on either side, or you can put it under 1 foot, like facing the long way. And then you can use your foot to go left to right, front to back. And then it's got four sets of springs that are actually interchangeable. inside of this thing. So you can have really lightweight springs or super heavy springs. And that'll depend on like how hard you have to press or how much you can rest your foot on the board without feeling like you're going to press something. And all it is it's a key map. So you set up in its like little admin panel, you set up what key you want the footboard to map to when you press in a certain direction.
Right.
And then you can use it in any game at all. It's not, doesn't matter, to do any action that you map it to, which sounds ridiculous, but it is literally, because it's just a key map, you just set it up however you feel like you want to set it up, and then it works. Yeah.
But you said it worked awesome, right?
It worked. Dude, I had, I don't want to say low expectations. I had, because I didn't. I had no idea.
It is called the stinky footboard.
Yeah, I mean,
you were skeptical.
I was skeptical, and I had no idea what to expect, essentially. Mm-hmm. And because I hadn't, I actually booked this with sight unseen. All they did was send me that they were making a foot peripheral for computers, and I was like, heck yeah, I want to see what a foot peripheral
yeah,
is.
For sure.
Oh, boy.
So I go, and I played some Battlefield with it. And I had, my mapping was if I pressed forward, I would go prone. I would like dive. If I pressed, or no, wait, no, if I pressed forward, I would sprint. That's what it was.
Oh, okay.
If I pressed right, I would, I think dive. Left, I would crouch. And back, I would, I don't know, maybe back was prone. I don't remember. It was the first thing I did at the con. I did a lot of things after that. But regardless, it worked amazingly. And then the one that I used a lot was the sprint, and it just was like second nature to be moving and then just press forward on my foot and have my guy start sprinting. And it like it just worked, and it
That's
just
so
worked
weird.
Really well, like surprisingly well. And so I started talking to them about where it came from and what they wanted to do with it, and then they started talking about the stuff that was kind of like the outliers of what you could do with this, which was so. Or actually, before I get into that, there's one other cool thing it did that I don't even think I told you guys. So the software has a mode that just says like auto mode. And essentially what you can do is set up a bunch of different profiles for it. So you could say like one profile is like W, or is like, you know, forward does W and left does shift A and right does L and, you know, whatever, different key mappings. And then you could set up a different profile for a different thing. And then you can map those profiles to games. So you could say this profile's for Battlefield, this profile's for WoW, this profile's for whatever. And then when you turn on your computer and start doing anything, whenever you fire up a game, if that's plugged in, the software will automatically kick it to the profile that you want it to.
Oh, that's cool.
So like you don't spend time configuring every time you're starting up a game. You don't have to set up a new profile or redo it or point it to a different thing. It'll just see the games running and then just move it over to that game and,
cool.
and let you play.
I can see this being for like a flight sim or like a space simulator of some sort being really, really cool.
Yeah.
Where it actually feels like intuitive that you're using your feet.
Yes.
Like for me, I don't know if I could ever use it for a shooter just because, you know, I've been playing shooters on my PC since I was, you know, 12 years old. So it's like, it'd be weird. But I could see like flying and using your feet would be awesome. Like engaging different missiles or maybe shifting the camera view to behind your plane or something cool like that could be amazing.
So they started talking about how the really hardcore are hooking up two of them because it'll run two different admin systems for each pedal. Like it recognizes them as different foot pedals.
Oh, whoa.
And then you could actually use both to map 8 keys total. And then they're working on like the first, I think they said the first patch that'll come in is going to allow for multi-keying. So like if you are doing something and you press like diagonally left and or front and left, it would hit both those keys and fire them both off. And it, right now it doesn't, but so they're talking about being able to do like up to like, you know, whatever, 16 combinations if you had two boards.
That's crazy.
It's melting my brain.
Yeah, I mean, it was crazy. But then the thing that blew my mind was the thing they said was one of the guys hooked it up and started using it to trigger Ableton Live, which is a music program. And I was like, oh my God, because it's just a key map. So you could map it to stuff inside of any program and start using it for anything, which is kind of ridiculous. They said there was one guy who was doing Photoshop actions with it because he's a graphic designer and he was doing stuff and he would just hit it and it would run an action in Photoshop. And the other guy was triggering things in Ableton with it. It just like, I was like, did you ever expect that? And they said, no, yeah, we built it for games, but we think it's so awesome that people are just starting to use it for different stuff. Cool. So it was really awesome. It's called the Stinky Footboard. We're hopefully going to get a review copy to get a little more in depth with it, but it's built like a tank and it's pretty awesome. I was really, really surprised with it. That's and awesome. I spent my, it was my whole hour, my whole media hour I spent playing it.
Wow. Well, crap.
Impressive.
Yeah.
Scott, I don't think I ever got what you did during your media hour. What did you do?
So during my media hour, I didn't really have a plan. So I just kind of wandered onto the floor and, you know, people are like running in. So I was just like, I got to find something to do. And the first thing I saw was The Last of Us and they had a playable demo. So I said, what the hell? And I did it. And I mean, The Last of Us, if you saw the video from E3, that's pretty much how the game plays, but it's playing it hands on is really fun because there's definitely like a stealth element to it. It's sort of a more survival oriented game compared to Uncharted. So you actually really do need to be careful because if you run in guns a-blazing, the creatures in the game will just overpower you and kill you right away. It's really difficult to survive once you start getting into combat with the creatures in the game, which I think they call tickers. And what the tickers are, they're kind of like these mutated human beings that do like echolocation. So they can't see you, but as long as you're being quiet, you can get around them.
That's a cool.
Yeah. And so
it seems like a pretty cool mechanic.
Yeah. So the way that the combat kind of works is that it really rewards you for doing stealth kills, like coming up behind them and like stabbing them. And let's see. So like pretty much what you would do is you would find something in the environment, you would scavenge. So I would take like a bottle off of a table or a brick or something, and I would throw the brick up against the wall, and then the ticker would go to check it out. And then I would creep up behind real carefully and do the grapple and get the stealth assassination and then run back and hide
again.
Do you
play as the girl or the guy?
You play... Okay, so the part of the game I was in, I played as... You play as the guy, from what I saw. Okay. There's a young girl with you and then a woman that also appears to be about your age. So the three of you are working together. The segment of the demo that we played, they see like a landscape and they're like, okay, we need to get all the way over there. So we start going through this like wrecked building or whatever, trying to make our way through the building and overcome the obstacles. And of course the building is filled with tickers and everything. It was cool. I mean, there's like the segment I played, there were two kinds of tickers. There were some that were like fully mutated and some that were half mutated. So the half mutated ones could still see you and they were a little faster, but you could choke them out to kill them. So if you wanted to stealth assassinate a regular ticker, you needed to scavenge in the game. And through scavenging components, I was able to build shivs. And with the shivs, I would like, you know, kill the tickers or whatever. So
that's cool.
Yeah, it was cool because it felt very basic. You didn't feel like... I had a shotgun at one point and I still didn't feel like a badass. And I still didn't want to run up and start shooting people with a shotgun because everyone else would hear where I was, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It kind of, it turns like your traditional weapons into panic weapons. And, it turns like the melee weapons into like your best friend. And it was kind of cool because there was a, person running the booth that was like standing on my side where all the consoles were. And he was kind of standing behind like four of us, but he was watching me play. And, at one point I picked up a bat and I carried around with me for a little bit. And then I scavenged and I was like dicking around in the crafting system. And I saw that you could like turn the bat into something more with your parts or whatever. So I think added like blades and like a, you know, look like razor blade friends to my bat. And I did it. And all of a sudden over my shoulder, I hear the guy go, "Nice." like, yeah. It's like, I'm going to fucking crush somebody with this bat. So I got to play. What's up?
So what a good way to start back.
Yeah, it was cool. So I got to play for like a half an hour, and I guess the only thing I could tell someone else is that if you saw the video, the gameplay will live up to that video, if not more so. And it really did look gorgeous, and it was fun to play.
Awesome.
Great. Cool. I'm glad it was good.
Yes. So, I don't know. Ash, what do you want to talk about next?
I guess it's like a mini rant, and you know, this is our, I don't know, fifth PAX. We said this in a couple editorials that we wrote, but we've been going to conventions for, I don't know, 20 years or something like that. And I just kind of felt like talking about the right way to do a booth and the wrong way to do a booth. And we're not going to mention any particular booths or developers or anything of that nature, just because that's not our style. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there were a couple times at this convention where we'd have appointments and then we'd be ushered into a room and shown a video. And then we would leave, and someone who works PR, and nothing against PR, most of the time they're totally awesome, would say, okay, well, do you have any questions? And you're like, for who? And they're like, you know, for PR. And we're like,
yeah.
No. We kind of read it already in the press release. It's like, I think most fans and most media, I mean, I used media for us loosely because we're still mainly fans. When we go to these things, we like to talk to developers and we like to talk to people that created these games and are passionate about these games. We don't want to talk to someone who's paid to memorize a script and talk about the game. So there were a couple instances that were very disappointing for large, large titles where we were just ushered into a room, shown a video clip, and then been like, all right, well, now what? And you know, the PR people didn't really know what to do with us, and we were like, well, we want to know more. We want to know what can you tell us?
And there was one in particular where we saw something in the video, and we were like, what the hell? That guy, I had questions. And then we walk out, and it was just like, all right, do you want to see anything else? And I was like, I want to see more of what I just, like, can I understand what I just watched? Yeah. But it was like, all right, here's the other thing. It's very weird to me when, especially at a place like PAX, when it's all about, like, you know, how do we get more info into the players' hands and how do we get them excited about this property, you know, and what can we do to really instill that, like, we do this for you guys to do something like that. And then it's just like, here's a video. All right, what else you want? And you're like, what? Like, no, I don't, this is weird feeling, you know?
It was weird. And there were some large publishers there that were clearly, I don't know if they didn't want to be there or they had way too much to drink the night before. But there are a couple groups that were giving presentations of games that aren't out yet, games that people should legitimately be excited about. And people were getting up out of the audience and leaving.
And these were like fans.
That was like shocking. That was really shocking.
Yeah. And I was like, wow. Like, and I felt bad because I was starting to – my ADD was kicking in, and I was, like, looking at the walls and, like, looking around. I'm like,
well, plus,
you're killing me here.
The particular one you're talking about was, like, right next to one of the noisiest booths on the floor, and they're, like, screaming out at the other booth, and you're just like, what is – you know, it was confusing. It was a confusing setup. It was a weird way to do it, and – yeah, I totally agree on this because even when I've not been press at Comic-Con, you know, most places still want to make you excited and like what can they do to, you know, get you into this whatever it is. And
for sure.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. With you.
So that was that. And the other part of my rant was just saying that, I mean, there are some groups that are doing it completely the right way. The indie mega booth is a great example. I mean, they had everyone there was just so fired up and so passionate and so excited, and even, you know, some of the larger studios that had a presence there that and some which I won't mention didn't even have to be there. They just went there because they wanted to be. They didn't have anything new to show off at all. They just kind of brought their developers, brought their team to go hang out with fans and to talk about the stuff that they made and the stuff that they love. So I, of course, respect that a lot, too.
Well, I think I would like to shift this then to a AAA title that we did get to see and we did get awesome treatment over, which is Saints Row 4.
Yes. Yeah, we could definitely talk kindly about them. So Saints Row 4 was a really great experience as media. It was a behind-the-scenes look at a video clip. But then after the video clip was done, we actually got to talk with the developers about the game, and questions were actually encouraged, which was awesome. So,
but you could see the contrast between. That's where like the contrast was most pronounced because those two guys were like super stoked about the game. You know what I mean? Like they wanted your questions. They wanted to talk about like the game. They were super proud of it. You know, and it showed.
And I also think that we were a little apprehensive because usually when we book like a big appointment and it's like, come to this separate hotel room to view the game, it always gets a little weird for us because we're not, you know, one of the bigger media outlets or
not
something.
Throw
so
our weight around or whatever.
Yeah, like we just show up and we're like, thanks for the free coffee, and like and like ask a couple questions and play a game. But this was like a totally different experience entirely. It was a few of us in the room. It was probably about 10 press people. They showed us the video and then it was just like, ask away, whatever you guys want to know, we'll tell you.
Yeah, it was.
What did we learn?
Well, so first of all, it was Jim Boone, who's the senior producer on Saints Row the Four, and Scott Phillips, who's the design director on Saints Row the Four. And we learned that they're absolutely crazy in the best way humanly possible. they, you know, for those of you who haven't played Saints Row the Third, it is an absolute blast. It's just in terms of open world sandbox, it's probably one of my favorite open world sandbox experiences, just because they let you pretty much do anything that you want. It's silly. It's creative. The level of customization is awesome. And Saints Row 4 seems to be a lot more than that. They are introducing superpowers into the franchise and alternate realities and monsters
and the dubstep gun.
And the dubstep gun. Which fires sound waves that force people to dance. And then I guess when the drop hits, people explode, which is great. You know, the music in this game is fun. The design is like top notch. It's silly, but like from the stuff we saw, I just wanted to play it like instantly, you know? And like I said, the fact that they're like, ask anything you want. And they answered our questions. They're like, now talk about whatever you want on your site. Mm-hmm. There was no like, you know, normally when you get information that's secret or new, they don't want you to say a damn word, but these guys were like, please tell everybody everything.
Yeah.
Which was, you know, kind of nice.
Super cool.
So what did you guys like about Saints Row?
Well, it seems like they basically just keyed in on the parts that were, you know, they basically took Saints Row 3 and they're like, okay, we tried this thing. It was over the top. People seem to be stoked on that. So let's just fix the things that were broken and then improve the things that are working. And then let's just make a better game. And I think that's what they set out to do. So now there's like, oh yeah, we have mechs and like giant monster trucks and you can fucking fly around sometimes. And it's like, you know, all this ridiculous stuff. And then they were also like, yeah, but we also try to think practically about what we could or could not do. You know, they said they were thinking about putting a dragon in. They're like, okay, seriously, that would have been cool, but it really just didn't make any sense, like gameplay wise or whatever, you know.
And they talked about other things where they tested certain things out to see how it went, and then it was like that's ridiculous, like driving a car on a roof of a building, you know. Like they're just like, this doesn't make any sense, so that we're just not going to be allowed to do that, you know. Which is awesome. I think they showed that they really cared about what they were creating in this, and not just like making it balls to the wall ridiculous, you know.
Exactly.
So yeah, that was actually one of my highlights. I really like the Saints Row 4 stuff, and they gave us a lot of coffee, so they won my love.
Cool, Matt. What do you want to talk about next?
Well, if it's up to me, although I think I brought up Saints Row 4, I will say what I think was my game of the con, which is Don't Starve. From the same guys that made Mark of the Ninja, which I think it actually, when I was talking to them, I think they said it's the same exact team that made Mark of the Ninja.
Have you had a chance to play this at all since?
I have not, because I haven't been able to. I bought the beta codes, but yeah. I haven't played it yet.
Oh,
so
I'm
basically, the concept is it's this very Tim Burton-esque style of art, and you're this family, right, that's stuck in the woods, kind of like you're building a cabin kind of in the woods.
I just saw a single person.
No, there's three different characters you can be. There's a girl, the guy.
I mean, but like at a time, it's a single player.
Yeah,
game,
yeah, it's a single person at a time. So, you know, the way they put it was like, it's like a truly survival horror version of Minecraft with like, with Tim Burton art style on it, if that makes sense. So I got to play a 15-minute demo. I had been hearing about this and I kept seeing the sign, and I walked past it and I finally was like, I'm just going to stand in line and play this damn thing because it looks amazing. So I stayed. I played the 15-minute demo. Beforehand, the guy goes, is there a tutorial? He goes, no tutorial. And I was like, okay. And I go, how do I play? He's like, you'll figure it out. He's like, there's a crafting menu on the left. He's like, the only advice I'll give you is make sure you have a source of light before night hits.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. He's like, I go, is night like particularly bad? He's like, there's things at night. Yeah. And I was like, okay. Yeah. So I'm playing, and it's so kind of calm at first. Like during the day, you're walking around, you're chopping down trees, you're like pulling up some grass and finding, you're like hunting rabbits, and you have these like rudimentary tools that you can build and make. And then you can look in the crafting menu and you can kind of build like haystack walls and a fire and a torch. And, you know, there's like little random things you can kind of craft immediately.
Starts out so innocent.
Yeah, so I go out and I grab stuff to make a fire, and then nighttime hits and I build my fire, and I'm like sitting at my house and I'm like, all right, well, what do I do now? And I'm like, well, it's night. I probably shouldn't wander too far. And then before I know it, I realize that like inky blackness is like moving in towards me, like very slowly, but it's just creeping in around my fire pit. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my God, my fire's dying. And I don't have enough to make two fires. So I'm like sitting there as the fire's going down, 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 down. And it eventually, and the art style plays into this so well. I'm like truly terrified now. I'm sitting in pitch blackness and there's only enough light to surround me and the fire, and it's like completely grayed out in color. Like it looks like
everything's scary, dude.
It's terrifying. And then I'm like watching the clock, because the clock's like almost about to hit morning, and I'm like, please, 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 please. And like right when my fire dies, it hits morning and the light comes flying on and like everything's okay. And then my demo ended right after that. So I didn't actually get to see any monsters in the night. So hopefully, Scott, you did.
Oh my God, dude. I have a couple of games running right now, and I am like, I'm at the point where I'm afraid to go into the game because I know that I'm going to die probably in the next day or two.
And we should say, when you die, you die.
Oh, games, yeah.
Game's over, restart, brand new.
And that's really what makes this game work, because it's the same idea, like roguelike, you know, like FTL, same idea where you're really playing to stay alive.
Yeah.
And when you die, the game is over. You can't just reload a checkpoint and try it again. You know, right. you basically start over. So
he did say the best thing he said to me. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. The best thing he said to me was that the best comparison he can give is that one day into playing Minecraft, like one night cycle in Minecraft, you'll have like a house, you know, like a small house and like a maybe a gun, or not a gun, but maybe some type of like fighting tool, you know, to use, and you'll be relatively secure. He was like, there are people that are like 2 weeks of cycles into playing Don't Starve, and they barely have like a wall and maybe a couple of fires. And he's like, every night they're still just huddled around their fire, sitting there waiting for the night
to go. That's awesome.
Dude, yeah, exactly. Like, it's, to me, this game is like a, who's the guy that we like? Not, is it Survivor Man? The one with,
I think that's the right one, right?
The guy that does it by himself, not the guy that has a camera crew.
Yes.
It's that. It's like a simulator of that, because you drop yourself off in the forest and you're like, what the fuck do I do?
Yeah.
And so you're like, day one, I'll collect some sticks and like pull up some weeds. And you're like, all right, cool. I built a fire. And it's like, well, day two and day three. And all of a sudden you realize you've already picked all the berries in the area. You've already pulled up all the carrots. And you're like, well, now I don't have any food. So you start like moving around and looking for things. And like pretty much your only tutorial, like your only guide is the crafting menu. So you're like, okay, I can build an axe and I can build a pickaxe. So you're like, I'm chopping down trees, I'm mining rocks. Like, what can I do then? And, like, I think I'm maybe 2 weeks in and I built my first weapon 2 weeks.
Wow.
In. So up until then, anything like a large animal, I'd run away.
Because all you had was like the spear, right? Was your only real weapon?
The spear, like, in the actual, like, the demo that they showed you was, like, accelerated.
Oh, so you had something before you would have normally had.
Right, like, it took me 12 days to build a spear. And wow. And that's probably partially my fault of not being experienced, but also, like, you're really just trying to manage so many competing resources at once. You know, it's like,
yeah,
that's you awesome. End up, it's like, I'm carrying too much stuff, so I have to put stuff away. It's like, now I have too many weapons, now I don't have enough food, or I need to make more fire. It's, you know, and the game, like, survival aspects aside, the game becomes weird, because the more you explore, you start to find things that are like supernatural, right?
Yeah.
So like I came upon two like steampunk looking like horse creatures. They look like rooks, and they were guarding like a music box. And I was like, oh my God, do I go pick up the music box? What the fuck is going on? And like, I ran in and stole it. And I started running, and they were chasing me, and all of a sudden these like evil pigs like popped out, and I got them to fight each other. And I was like, I'm getting out of here. I don't know what to do. You know,
yeah, what was in the music box?
That's the thing. That's what makes this game great, is that you find weird shit.
Yeah.
They don't tell you how to use it. Like, you basically just look at what you can craft and you're like, okay, so I can build a straight razor. I can shave my beard. And then I think I realized that, like, you can use your beard clippings to create some kind of, like, resurrection tonic. But, like, that kind of stuff for me is, like, weeks away in the game.
Yeah.
You know?
He said that this game really was built to reward somebody who explores the game while still not starving. He was like, the title will always be true, like, don't starve, you know. But that they do want to reward you for, like, pushing further out and seeing what you can find and do. So, and
I want to play this, like, immediately.
I will
I'm dying to get it.
Let me say one last thing about this, because one of my games is falling apart, and I did like, with the darkness thing, I did let my sanity, like, slip pretty much all the way almost until I died. And, like, at night, these nightmare creatures start appearing, and they, like, chase me around. And as you get, like, really insane, they'll start attacking you. So by that point, I had a spear, and I killed one of them, and killing one dropped an item. So, like, now I know that at some point I'm going to have to try to kill these things to build something else. So it's like I'm going to have to make myself go insane, kill these things, do something, and then bring myself back out again. And, like, that's just how weird the game is. It's just weird shit.
That's awesome.
Cool, we're back. We're going to talk about some more of our PAX East 2013 experiences. And the next thing I want to talk about is the new game from Supergiant Games, which is Transistor.
Ugh.
Yes.
So good.
And you guys went with me to the demo, but unfortunately you did not get to hear it because they had a station set up with headphones. But I played the game, and I don't know, like, I hate to make it sound like I'm overreacting, but, like, this game is really good. Like, I think this is probably my game of show is Transistor. Like, it was really good.
That's the general buzz on this game. I mean, as we walked around for the 3 days at PAX, the lines for this game were hours long the entire weekend.
Super, and they had probably the biggest setup to play, too. It had to be at least 9, if not 12 PCs running,
yeah,
with Transistor on it, and they were constantly playing.
I mean, I know they're like an indie studio, but I'm gonna use finger quotes, like, indie booth. Like, it was still a pretty big booth. It was like, you know, probably as large as one of the smallest, like, AAA booths or whatever. You know, it was significant.
Yeah, it was big.
Yeah, it was awesome. And we don't have to spend a whole lot of time talking about it. I wrote a gigantic article on nerdappropriate.com about Transistor. So if you want to, like, get all the detail, please go there and read it. But pretty much, like, it's so hard to explain. Like, they're so good at putting
together. You're like a pop diva who's, like, lost your voice, and, like, and you're in this, like, dystopian future kind of Tron-esque world. Mm-hmm. And it's a hybrid between turn-based strategy in a sense and, like, real-time combat, in that you can freeze and slow time and queue up moves. It's actually really innovative and really cool from what I saw.
It's amazing how good they are at finding ways to weave together, like, art and music and, you know, voice, whether it be through music or in-game voice acting. Like, it all just goes together so well, and it all fits, like, the same theme. And when we talked to them a little bit about sort of, like, the transition between Bastion and Transistor, they kind of made the point that Bastion was more of a fantasy game and had a frontier feel, and the music was kind of, like, stripped down, and it looked a little more cartoonish as far as the art goes. And in Transistor, everything is meant to look a little bit more mature. Like Ash said, like, technological, futuristic. Even the characters are contrasts of one another between the kid and the new character, Red, who is the vocalist. She has like sort of a long, lean look. And the music like kind of has more of like an electronic edge to it. But, you know, right from the start, if anyone's heard that trailer for the game, like the music just like grabs you in right away. And the turn-based portion of the combat is spectacular. And even though I only got to experience it with like four moves in the game, you can see like where it's going to go. Like as you acquire more moves and level up and all that good stuff, it's just going to be, there's going to be so many possibilities for how you can pick a move set and approach combat, whether in real time or in the turn system, which is what they call it. And I just really think it's going to be incredible. But we have to wait until 2014 for this game.
If it's ready.
Very early.
Yeah.
And I wanted to call it really quick because he said, we brought up the art to them or to him while we were interviewing him. And he said, oh, we have our art director, Gen Z, who came on through Bastion, you know, is the pretty much sets all of the style for Transistor. So I actually looked her up when I got back that night, and she's got a Tumblr and a DeviantArt site and all that, and her stuff is mind-blowing. So her name's Gen Z, J-E-N-Z-E-E.
Cool.
And I love it. Her stuff is awesome. So
I will have to check it out.
Yeah.
That's super cool.
So other indie stuff that had some awesome art that we are fans of is the new game that's coming out from the Game Bakers. And we were lucky enough to meet with the Game Bakers right as they got off the plane from France.
Yeah.
we were literally their first appointment. And we were kind of laughing. For those that aren't familiar with the Game Bakers, they did Squids last year, and then Squids Wild West was the follow-up to Squids. And Squids was an awesome iOS title that was kind of how would you explain that in like a sentence, Scott?
I would call it like a tactical turn-based strategy game.
Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, top-down that used a Angry Bird style game mechanic to control the characters.
Yeah. But it was Squids was entirely stylized, great music, great characters, just full of like we said when we reviewed it, it's Disney quality. I mean, it's beautiful. So when we heard that they were thinking of coming back to PAX East, we kind of jumped at the chance to talk to them again. And they have something brand new for us, and that is this game, Combo Crew, which we got to check out. And Combo Crew was pretty awesome. First, I guess we should say that they were complaining about being jet lagged, but they both looked like they just got back from like a photo shoot.
Yeah.
They're like, we're so tired, we're so jet lagged. I'm like, you guys look fucking amazing. They're like fresh off the plane from France with their French accents, and like we're, haggard and disgusting and like beardy and like sneezing, and they're like, we are so tired. We're like, you don't look tired.
They're so nice too.
They are so nice. We love talking with them. So we're hoping they go to Prime and more, you guys get to meet them. Mm-hmm. Combo Crew is really cool. It's a beat 'em up game for iOS right now, and I guess for Android as well, right?
They built it on Unity, so I don't know if it's coming out at the same exact time, but it is for Android as well eventually.
And essentially, you play a character, and I guess what Emmerich equated it to was a game like Streets of Rage, where you are getting through different waves of enemies, and you're mastering different combos in order to progress. But the way that they set it up on the touch screen is really, really innovative. You do different swipes to initiate different moves. And so you can set basically different move sets in the menus so that you're only really ever using, I think they said, between 4 and 8 different finger swipe types, all of which initiate different combos. And so you're constantly swiping on the screen, and your character's moving, and it's beautifully animated, by the way, around the screen and like going through all these insane combos, and you're linking them all together to build bigger and bigger combos. It looked incredible, and it really reminded me of something that Capcom would do. It was just really, really pretty.
I thought it was really impressive. Like, I think the thing that lets you know this game is going to be good, like if you had never played Squids, just talking to him, you kind of get this sense that he is like, he's very like knowledgeable about games, and he's very aware of like the history of games and like what he likes and what, how like a game like, like a side-scrolling beat-em-up game from the 80s would translate to iOS, and how to modernize something like that and just sort of integrate all the things you liked throughout gaming into a new game like Combo Crew. Did you get that same sense too?
Yeah, absolutely. You can definitely tell that he was a fan of the same stuff we were as kids. I mean, even in the soundtrack was totally like 80s inspired, you know. You know, a lot of like hair metal kind of going on in the background. The characters like looked like something torn from a Streets of Rage game, but modernized, and definitely a lot cooler looking. But, you know, like you could just even see like almost a Double Dragon influence in Combo Crew. Like one of the characters even looks a little bit like one of the Abobos. Do you guys remember Abobos?
Yes. Totally like an homage.
Like, yeah, like he looks like a tricked out Abobo. So Combo Crew, I don't know if they gave a release date, but definitely keep your eyes out for it. It was awesome. It was much more than what I was expecting. Sort of the same thing that happened to me when I first saw Squids and I talked to them. I was like, wow, like this is a really quality title. The animation's beautiful. The music's beautiful. You know, and it's really good to see quality things like this on iOS. I mean, it really is a legitimate platform now. I mean, I never thought I would say it a couple of years ago that like I'm excited about iPad games, but I'm really excited about a lot of iPad games.
They even just to wrap it up, they even put the effort into designing controls that work for the iPhone as well as the larger iPad, as far as like the way you hold it and how you interact with those screens differently.
Yeah, definitely. So you used actually different types of finger swipes depending on what device you're using, which I thought was really innovative. So
yep, super intuitive.
Cool. So definitely, guys, keep your eyes out for that one. And hopefully we can coerce them to coming out to Prime and hanging out. And you guys can check it out there.
Yeah.
Scott, tell us about Girls Like Robots.
Yes, I'll tell you about Girls Like Robots.
Yeah, tell us
all. So this one was easy for me because I was standing around in the indie mega booth and I saw the word robots and I thought, hey, I like robots. So, and I kind of like girls too. So I was like, I'm going to go check this out.
Gentlemen podcast.
Gentlemen podcast.
I like girls and like robot girls.
Yes. So Girls Like Robots is sort of like a quirky, it's funny because I call it the, if there's a genre for adventure seating arrangement games, this game would be at the top of the list. It's pretty cool. So pretty much the way the game works is that you have a set of tiles, and these tiles have pictures on them. And the game starts out very simply. You have to arrange these tiles on a game board, so like a grid of squares. Imagine like a grid of 9 squares. And they give you these tiles, and they're like, okay, here are the rules. Girls Like Robots, like, you can't surround a robot with more than 4 girls. Girls don't like nerds, which kind of hurts. Girls don't like nerds, and nerds like being on edges. So using these rules, you have to find ways to arrange these characters in a way that maximizes the points for that level. And that's just where the game starts. Like, the game becomes much more complex. Like, as you progress through the game, you pick up more of the game's rules. And they even kind of like change up the gameplay just to keep things fresh. So like there are some levels where they give you the tiles in a specific order, so you can't just put them wherever you want. There are levels where there are like hazards like on the game board. There are some levels that have real-time elements to them. So it's kind of like you have to be a little tactical in like how quickly you put your tiles down. But it's a super fun game. It's on like iOS and Android. I think you can even get on Desura right now. It's on Steam Greenlight. But it's one of those, like, just need, like, you got 5 minutes, like, in the line or, like, waiting on the train or whatever. It's one of those games, and it's super fun. And I think, I found out afterwards that it falls under the umbrella of, Adult Swim games. So
I'd like to throw in there, cause I've been a fan of Adult Swim games for a while. Mm-hmm. They are a publisher that continually puts out like the weirdest, quirkiest games that are absolutely addicting. Yeah,
man, you got me playing Monsters
Ate My Condo.
Yep.
But they've put out a bunch. There was the unicorn. What was the unicorn one? There's one with the unicorn too. Yeah, they're all awesome. So, anyways, I just wanted to interject.
So that's
they actually just started following us on Twitter because of Scott's article.
Yeah, cool. There's an article too. So go, please read that as well.
So we'll just stay in the indie mega booth, which I think is almost what we're doing for the rest of this.
That's kind of like the highlight of the convention, I think.
I mean, it was huge.
As far as the expo floor goes.
Yeah, it dominated the floor. It had to be a quarter of the room, it felt like. But...
definitely the PAX of indie games. Indie games kind of won this battle.
I got an email ahead of time from one developer. It was like, oh, this game called Golden Arrow. It's for the iPhone. And it's a single developer game. You know, like, would you want to check it out? And I said, you know, yeah, I'll swing by on Sunday. I'll come by the Indie Mega booth and we'll try it out. And after a couple of miscues, Scott and I finally got to connect with the developer. Her name is Jenna Hofstein. And the game she made is called Golden Arrow. And it's kind of awesome. It's an infinite runner on the iPhone. And it's you play as a monster running away from this like badass princess who's trying to kill the monster. And as you play and as you run through and beat different levels, you unlock these scrolls that tell a kind of fairy tale story of this princess and why she's trying to run this monster out of the kingdom and kill him and other things that go on in her life and in the monsters too. It's punishingly hard.
It is so hard. It is so hard. Oh my gosh.
I know Ash has played a lot more than I have. I got to play on the floor alone. I was hoping I misread and thought it was an iPad too, but it is just iPhone only right now. She was talking about possibly going Android, but that's only if this game does well enough to like kind of promote the need for Android, you know. Mm-hmm. Being a single developer, I'm sure her time is limited, so it's yes. You know, can only develop so much. But I kind of fell in love with the game just over the kind of whimsy that it creates for the idea of being a single runner. The whole style is very 8-bit. The music is very 8-bit, and it's kind of, she said that the beginning is kind of dynamically generated, so you'll get different intro music every time you start running the game, and I don't know, it was fun. What do you think? I know you've been playing a little, Ash. Have you liked it?
Yeah, I mean, it is insanely challenging. And pretty punishing. So, you know, as you're running, you're this like awesome little Sasquatch guy, and there's all these obstacles that get in your way. And one of the things, they almost kind of look like coconuts that you can run into that slow you down. And you get going so fast that sometimes you actually like want to hit a coconut. You're like, oh, I need to fucking slow down. And so you hit these things on purpose, but then sometimes you won't have enough momentum to make a jump and you'll splat. And it's also not the type of thing where you have any health. Like if you hit anything that's considered an obstacle, you just die, like old school, you know, 8-bit Nintendo style. So it requires incredible precision and a lot of patience. But the fact that the however many meters you go unlocks more of the story is really cool. And I don't think I've really ever seen that before. And the fact that one developer, Jenna Hofstein, actually made this all herself is really cool. So
wrote it all herself too. She said front to back. The only thing she didn't do is the music. She had somebody do the music for her, but everything else has been her front to back. So we got a little bit of audio bits and hopefully I'll write this up soon enough and we'll include some of that. But she talks about how while writing the story, it started becoming like more of a personal story almost, and like like weirdly like the monster was like, you know, her life in a way, and she was trying to get after it and like kill the bad things that were happening. And I was like, it was awesome to listen to. But
I think having a narrative makes a huge difference in a game like this. It really adds depth to this kind of game.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely.
I wanted to know why I was running away.
I think that's what you find
more,
out.
Please.
If you can ever get to the end.
Ash, you wanted to talk about Secret Poncho?
Yes. So there's this game that I stumbled across. We didn't have an appointment for them or anything, but I was wandering the floor aimlessly, and I came upon some art on a booth that I really, really liked. And it really reminded me of like old Scud the Disposable Assassin art from Rob Schrab, the old stuff. And I saw it, and it was like super stylized and really cool looking. And I was like, wow, I really like that. I'm like, what is this game about? And so I looked down, and the game's called Secret Ponchos from a small studio by the name of Switchblade Monkeys. And They're a relatively new studio. They have a lot of experience under their belt. They come from all different walks of life in the industry. They're all a group of friends who decided that they wanted to kind of band together and make something kind of cool and unique. So they made a shooter kind of hybrid with a fighting game, in that each character, it's basically class-based shooter, but it's top-down. So you run around this large map, and there's all different spaghetti western-themed characters. You know, there's different gunslingers, there's a guy with a shotgun, and you basically have different sets of special moves, and you run around these large maps and you kill each other. But it was a lot of fun, and just the style of the game was really unique and really different.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the gameplay and specifically how that felt.
Yeah, well, it's pretty cool. I mean, since your character is pretty small, there's not a whole lot of detail in the character models, which I kind of liked, which is why I kind of equated it to Rob Schrab's stuff, because his stuff's pretty simple. The characters moved really well in terms of the shooting mechanic. It's set up a lot like a first-person shooter. So you pull the left trigger down to actually aim your gun, and it shows you a reticle of how far you can shoot and where your bullet's going to go. And then the right trigger actually fires the gun. Okay, so X is going to be reload just like a shooter, and then you have special moves that are actually assigned to the different buttons on the gamepad. So you can do a number of different special moves with each character, like throw Molotov cocktails or light the ground on fire so that when people run through it, they take damage. Yeah, and each character is really, really different. Like there's this one really fat character who has a bayonet on his gun and he can charge and stab people. And there's like another kind of morbidly obese character with a Gatling gun who's just like this giant slob of a machine gunner. But it was really cool. Like the character design is something that I fell in love with very, very quickly. And since I love comic books so much, I was like, oh, I want to see like what the other characters are going to be like. So, right now there are, I think, 5 or 6 playable characters, in the pre-alpha. And I believe that, of course, by the time the game actually goes live sometime this year or next year, there will be many more. But Secret Ponchos was a lot of fun.
Where do they plan to release this game? Is it going to be like on Steam or arcade or what?
It made it sound like they're pushing for XBLA.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so they're going to try and make an XBLA title. But I would not be surprised if it didn't come out for Steam as well, because it seems like it would translate really well to mouse keyboard.
Awesome.
Yeah, so that was a surprise.
We're kind of running short on time, so we're going to talk about one more thing. And it's actually Tabletop, which is awesome, because we found it.
Yeah,
Matt found the game. Yes.
Yeah, the floor was weirdly split up this year. The PC gaming area was in the middle, like with two walls closing it off. And then if you kept going past that wall, there was the tabletop area, like way on the other side of the convention floor, mm-hmm. like completely separated from the main kind of video game area, which may have had its benefits. I have no idea, but I kind of wandered out there on Saturday and walked around, and this game called High Heavens caught my eye. So on Sunday, I grabbed Scott and said, hey, I really want to demo this game. Let's go over and try it out. And we did. We went over, tried it out, actually got to play it with the guy who made it kind of over our shoulder telling us how things work. And his name's Ryan Lester, and he comes actually from Harmonix. Mm-hmm. He's one of their art guys. I don't know if he's the art director or if he just is one of their main art guys, but super, super nice. Kind of just has a love for tabletop and wanted to kind of apply what he's learned at Harmonix about making games and make a tabletop game. And in this game, you play either as Norse gods or Greek gods, and you get these like cards, and it's a grid-based game, and you get, or actually a hexagonal-based game, which I guess is still a grid.
It's kind of like almost like Hero Academy with gods.
Yeah, that's so cool. Each of the gods has their own powers and movement and all this kind of stuff. And then they each, like, based on the god, he kind of created, like, a special ability. So, like, Cronus, the god for the Greek, will like, eat a fallen god to gain armor for himself. And, like, Athena comes out with her shield already. And, you know, like, all these different gods have different abilities based on kind of their legend of who they were originally. Mm-hmm. The art is pretty awesome. He's doing the art for all the different cards, and they're all drawn like the Norse gods look totally badass. Like their cards are kind of black, and they all look like big and just like ridiculously tough. And then the Greek gods look less badass, but have their own badass look to them.
They're like heavenly, you know.
Yeah, like they look very heavenly. Yeah, that's a really good way to put it. And so the game is getting kickstarted right now. It's on Kickstarter. If you just go search for High Heavens, because the URL is really long, if you go search for High Heavens, you'll find it. But the basic gameplay is you move your gods out onto the board in kind of random order. You have a draw pile that you're pulling your cards out, and there's actions as well that you can do in that draw pile. And then you get 3 actions per turn. And those 3 actions, you know, can be anything from moving your god to attacking to playing an action card, and or using a special power. And you do that in a sort of strategical way to beat your enemy, because your enemy has a base and you have a base, and they've each got 15 points of life, and you're trying to get them down to zero. So I don't know. I mean, we sat down and kind of just played. It was fun. Like, it didn't take a lot of talking or figuring out how it worked. We kind of just went, you know, and did it. What was your impressions, Scott?
I mean, it's cool because it's like you're playing a card game where you know, the characters you draw are the ones you cast or whatever, but the actual tactical part, the strategy part, and the combat part all takes part on the hex board, a la kind of Hero Academy style. So there's a lot of variability in the game because you have to account for the cards that you might draw and the characters you do have on the board. And then every character has their own ability. And the thing that I thought was really cool is that we asked Ryan, like, hey, why did you decide to use these gods? And he was like, well, when I was a kid, I had I think he said he had a book about like Greek gods or something. And he just became like super interested in the material. So like, everything that kind of went into this game were things that were like of his own interest. And the thing that I thought was well designed is that the powers that the gods have and like their stats kind of match up to like what you would expect. You know what I mean? So it's very intuitive and cleverly designed.
Yeah, he's got a bunch of reach goals, you know, like the pieces in the board will be better the more money he makes to back the game. He's working with the team that did Z-Pocalypse, which is another pretty popular Kickstart board game, to do his Kickstarter, and seems to be going pretty well. He's about halfway to his goal right now, and he's got 34 days left.
Yeah.
So hopefully he'll do it. But I had a blast playing the game, and I did ask. I said, "So are you going to get? Are there going to be expansion packs with more
gods,
like mythologies?" And he said that is definitely the goal eventually. That right now he's just focusing on the two, but that he sees the potential for having expansion packs of different gods and different groups from different religions.
Yeah.
So it was fun, man. It's just one-on-one too. And I would say really quick, because I know we're running out of time, that there were a couple times where I thought I had Scott cornered, and I was like, hell yeah, I'm going to kick Scott's ass. And he ended up winning. Like, he ended up coming back and taking me out.
Oh, it was crazy. Like, toe-to-toe right until the end. Like, evenly matched.
Super balanced. And the game next to us, same exact thing. Like, super balanced game right next to us, too. So he's definitely put a lot of time and effort into bouncing it correctly. Mm. So.
Very cool.
All right.
Yeah, little tabletop. Finally, every year I say, man, I wish I did more tabletop. And this year I hung out. I got a bunch of other tester games that we're going to play, too, and hung out and talked to some people. And I had a really good time on tabletop this year. So I'm really glad I did it.
All right, guys, we are back with our Nequado for Nerd Appropriate episode 99, which is, did you attend PAX, GDC, or WonderCon? If so, what were some of your best memories? Do tell. And it's crazy. March is a kind of a ridiculous month for conventions. Like, we did MegaCon and then PAX back to back. But if you're super hardcore, you may have done PAX, GDC, WonderCon. I mean, they're all happening within a couple weeks of one another. Mm. So we figured we'd put a con-themed question out there for all of the con carnies that were adventuring over the past few weeks.
Yes.
And so we got a number of great responses. And some of these folks we actually know now, which is really, really cool.
Yay.
Yeah.
Cool.
The first one is from Sigmaru. Our Stephanie G, and you can hear her on the Team Banana Punch High Command podcast, which is really a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. She says, fighting zombies and getting photobombed by Waldo with TK 1625, and this is at WonderCon, and she says that was pretty memorable.
Nice.
I feel like there's a story that I'm not getting there.
Yeah, I wasn't there.
Yeah, no.
WonderCon. It was a blast this year. It looked like a little mini Comic-Con with tons. So maybe next year.
Cool. Our friend Anna Schumann from Reset Transmission at Press to Reset, who we hung out with those guys a whole lot, which was super cool. She said, seeing old friends, meeting new ones, also harassing the Oregon Trail people and challenging them to an Oregon Trail off.
Yeah.
I think she's just throwing down challenges, because I think if you listen to the foreplay panel, she threw out a money match challenge for Oregon Trail 2 as well.
Yeah,
so
yes.
Good luck with that.
Yeah.
The obsession with that game is just odd to me.
I think it's because...
It's like, not a competitive game. How do you compete? Like, there's nothing to compete. Either you make it or you don't. Like,
part of me feels like I'm old enough to remember being forced to play Oregon Trail at school, like ad nauseum, because it was the only game that we were allowed to play on, like, the old whatever Apple IIe's that we had, or whatever piece of junk computers we had back then. And played it so much that, like, I tried to kick that game on, and I'm like, God, this is just torture already for me.
Oregon Trail 2 is a totally different beast, though. It's bizarre.
It's weird. I can't do it.
Just watch Anna play it on
Twitch TV.
Yep, there you go.
So our buddy, and now officially not I guess he could be a doppelganger, but not me, Nate Hales at NHales80 says, WonderCon memory, strategically trying to photobomb at Denise Kwan photos with at Megan Yo. Team Banana Punch has a good time. And then at PAX, PAX memory was surrounded 10 pizzas playing a board game on the floor of a hotel while NA played Space Team in the background. So to elaborate on this one, on Friday night we tried to hook up dinner and it just didn't happen. There's a lot of Reset Transmission people, by the way, may I say. There's like four of us. And
just add water and then there's more of them.
Yeah, there's a lot of them. So we were trying to like somehow figure out dinner for us, Reset Transmission, and Mylan and her husband, and I don't, was anybody else? I think it was
some
everybody, right? Oh, and then Tin Man Games from Mylan.
Yep.
Yeah. So like we're trying to get this massive dinner pulled off, and we're like, there's no way this is going to happen. So on Saturday night, we decided we bought some pizzas. Everybody came to our hotel lobby, and we all hung out and played board games and played Space Team and ate pizza and hung out and told stories, and it was awesome. It was a really good hangout Saturday night. So
indeed.
Might be a future tradition of simpleness.
It might be, because that worked out very well.
Yeah. We should just reserve our own banquet hall at the hotel next time.
Yeah, there we go. Exactly.
Yes.
And should I say, I had a great time ordering that pizza, too. It was a lot of fun.
You were a trooper.
Oh, my God.
Trooper.
Nice job, sir.
Yeah.
Yeah. It got there.
It did. We got it all.
How about one of you guys? How about a memory from PAX?
Not to
put you on the spot.
I had a couple. One was getting to do some of the stuff that we did at the BioWare base was pretty awesome. And their level of openness with us was really awesome.
Absolutely.
And also getting ushered into the BioWare panel on the main stage, was incredible, because we got to skip the whole line.
Yeah.
It's very nice of them to do that.
It was rare that I ever feel like a big shot ever. And even for like, one fleeting moment, I was like, I'm somebody for just like minutes. I'm important. And then, of course that faded away very, very quickly, but I was like, wow, like I get to be important here for a minute. So that felt pretty cool.
And then I hooked up Mel and Anna with seats in front of us. So
there you go.
What are you going to do?
There you go. That was nice of you.
All right.
Just the whole experience. Actually, one of my fondest memories was actually in the danger booth with you guys and Hillary, and actually taking a group photo with all of us.
Oh yeah,
at the same time.
All four of us in one place.
It was crazy. So
mine actually, if I can go ahead and say mine, because it relates to what we're about to say.
Okay.
Mine actually this year. It's too bad she isn't on. Couldn't make it today, but mine was actually getting to see one of our own, actually a few of our own, have a panel, do a panel at all at PAX, and then watch the room like fill out. Like there was a ton of people.
Such
and, like,
a great response for that.
It was
panel.
Such an awesome response. And then like I was sitting there and I was like, okay, I had like a question ready to go, because I know how panels can be sometimes, and like people won't get up and ask questions. And I was like, all right, well, when the questions start, if no one gets up to ask a question, I'll like kickstart it. I've got a question, And it gets to the end, and Sean Baptiste is like, all right, we're going to take questions. And then, like, I turn around and there's like already 10 people standing up, like waiting to ask a question. I was like, oh crap, I don't have to do it. I'll just sit here and listen. This is awesome. So that was my favorite memory of this con, was getting to see, you know, one of our own plus friends put on a panel and succeed very well at it. It was awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
They did a
and
good.
You said you hit something important there too, friends. It was like awesome going this year and being like, I know a lot of people and I consider them all friends.
Yeah.
And it was awesome seeing them and like high fiving and telling stories and just like, and they're also creative and inspirational. And that's, you know, why, of course, not to get sappy, but why we do this, because we love that kind of stuff and we love, you know, creative, smart, inspirational people. So there's just like, you know, endless amounts of that happening at PAX weekend. So,
which leads into Lacey Wilson, who said meeting the NA crew, duh.
Yeah, Lacey. So yeah, we met Lacey. Lacey was on the foreplay panel, and she's actually writing Hex Boyfriends right now.
Yes,
she's writing something for Tin Man.
She's writing for Tin Man. She's writing the next book in the Boyfriend series. But she was hilarious on the panel, and it was awesome getting to meet her too. So
she's super cool. Can't wait to meet with her again.
Andrew Baker at abakern7 says, miss both, love the tweets from PAX panels and the podcast on romance and gaming with Hillary and Raphael Sabarge, who was kind enough just to show up and be on the panel.
Yeah, he answered some questions. He's a super nice guy. I got to take a picture with him to make Melissa squeal a little when I sent it to her.
How did she like that, by the way?
Oh, she loved it. She was like, ah, like was the response essentially. And she, I forgot, she got to meet him at Comic-Con at the BioWare base too. She met him at the Nerd...
Nerd HQ?
Yes.
Yes.
I got to meet him there. But yeah, she loved it. He was super nice, definitely.
Cool. Let's see. I'm going to share my memory before we read the last one.
Do it.
And I think I would say, like, definitely all the stuff. Like, we all got to hang out and we saw our friends and got to hang out with Tin Man Games and Mylin and her husband and all that stuff. But there was a... There was actually, I think it was on Saturday, I was by myself, and I sat down to eat lunch, and I was just kind of sitting up against the wall, and a guy sat down in front of me, and he was eating, but he was eating at like a table of four, and these like kids came and sat down next to him, and it was like an older brother and a younger sister, but they were both young, you know, I don't know who they came with or what was going on, but they sat down, and they were eating, and they... It seemed like, I don't know what their situation is, I'm not going to guess, but they didn't seem to have a lot of money because the kid was just eating like trail mix and like the really young girl was just having a salad or whatever. And the girl's like, I'm hungry, blah, blah, blah. And the brother's like, all right, fine. And he like pours some of his trail mix in. And then the guy sitting with them was just like, here, you can have some of my salad. And like dumped in like chicken and carrots and just like gave her half the salad. And I just thought that was like a really cool moment for this like complete stranger just to like give his food to these kids because maybe they had, I don't know, didn't have the money or spend it on something else earlier in the day. And I just thought, like, I think it's like things like that that you see that kind of encapsulate sort of the whole vibe of PAX. And when people outside try to say like negative things about the influence of like video games on people and all this stuff, and then you go to PAX and you see sort of like this community kind of bonded together. And for the most part, everybody's super cool to each other. And like, As packed as that place is, you would think that there would be like riots in the streets, but like everyone's like super cool and has a good time. And for
really
me, like,
polite, yeah.
For me, just kind of like being a fly on the wall for that moment of PAX, like just kind of like restored my faith in humanity a little bit. So I thought, I thought that was super cool. I thought that was really nice of him to do that. I'm not going to go up and say something like, hey, congrats, because that's not why he did it. But like, I wish I had a shirt or something to give him at the time, because I thought that was just super cool.
Yeah, and like, you know, the media loves to boil an industry down to the billion seller COD Blops or Halo or something, but you forget and then you show up at PAX and it's like this just rainbow of creativity all over the place, you know, like just any weird different kind of game that might
positive
happen
attitude,
or normal or good
stuff.
Or so agreed, sir.
All right.
Cool.
Sorry to get sappy, but this is our gentleman podcast.
Oh, we have one more. I almost forgot. So the last was one of our saving graces, Mr. Ryan Warden, who was actually working at the BioWare base for BioWare, and he is a a manager of some sort at BioWare. He has a secret job at BioWare, but he was awesome. And he helped us so much on this project that we cannot name until next week. But he was a huge help. And he says, meeting you guys. And then he says, aw, thunderous applause breaks out, masking me eating sandwiches in the corner. But Ryan was awesome. And I know Ryan helped Hillary out a lot, too, at the base. So hats off to Mr. Ryan Warden for being awesome.
And you know what? Since Hillary isn't here this week, I'm just going to give Hillary kudos, and kudos to her and all of the crew for putting an awesome BioWare base together.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah. It was awesome.
This year's base was awesome. Like, had like sweet, cool mood lighting and like a humongous space with like social tables to stand out and chairs to sit at. And
can we request the photo booth to come back?
Oh, yes. Awesome?
Yeah.
That was great. It was great watching the cosplayers come in and take pictures. And they were just, it was awesome. I loved it.
Yeah. It was neat. They did a great job. And they filled up all those panels almost every single time. So,
yeah.
Even though they were not necessarily showing off anything new, there is still almost frenzied desire to know what the heck BioWare has to say.
Mm-hmm. It did become kind of my nerd HQ of PAX, where like when I needed a second to just take a breath and not be in like a group of 50,000 people, I would go up to BioWare base and kind of sit in the corner for a second, just be like, "Oh, BioWare, everything's great. I'm just relaxing for a minute, you know." Like,
yeah,
for real.
And thank you to them as well for
putting up
for tolerating us. Yes, letting us kind of hang around and see the things. So
yeah,
they let us touch wires. That's crazy.
They did.
I don't know why they did though. I mean, maybe
I don't know why either.
Maybe we'll find out. Yeah,
find out later.
We'll see.
Okay.
All right, guys. That about wraps things up for episode 99.
99. Oh my God.
Fucking crazy of the Rated NA podcast. And that means our next one is going to be episode 100 with something that's going to happen.
Podcast gifts.
Ah, yes.
The podcast gifts. The podcast fairy is coming to drop gifts off to all of you.
Okay, I can't wait. I'm pretty excited.
And look at us, you guys. We were able to have a gentleman podcast for an entire hour and a half.
Yeah. I only talked about memories once.
And there was nary a mention of Dong.
Nary.
Great. as always, if you guys are looking for us, you can find us on Twitter at NerdAppropriate. And we love talking to you guys on Twitter. So please tweet at us all the time and we will tweet back at you. It'll be a tweet. Tweet-o-rama.
Tweet-o-rama.
Tweet-o-rama. If you want to email us directly and send us pictures of whatever you want, you can send all your pictures to Scott at nerdappropriate.com or Matt at nerdappropriate.com, Ash or Hillary with one L at nerdappropriate.com. We will read your emails, every single one of them, so please do that. Our buddy Jimmy Hinson wrote our theme music, and we thank him each and every week because he is an awesome man, and he actually just got back from GDC, and we want to hear about his adventures soon, so maybe we'll eventually...
And seriously, Brian, if you guys like Mass Effect, like this guy has like multiple albums of Mass Effect music, like used or unused or remixed, and it's all awesome.
Yeah.
So go visit his Bandcamp.
Yeah, visit his Bandcamp. I think you can just go to biggiantcircles.com or music.biggiantcircles.com. But he also, if you love our theme song, which you should because it's badass, he does have it on Bandcamp for sale. You can buy it and download it and listen to it and think that this is amazing over and over again.
Yes.
Yeah. Real. And as always, shout out to everyone who listens. We love and appreciate you guys. And shout out to Hillary. We wish she could be here this week. And who else? Team Banana Punch. It was good.
Press to reset and reset transmission. Great to finally meet everybody. I got to meet everybody this year, which is great.
Super cool. And who else? Sean and Mylin.
Yes. New best friends.
They were super awesome. We want to hang out with them. Absolutely. Talking about maybe DC this summer, guys. We should go visit them
DC.
Together.
Love it. Favorite city in the country.
And so that's it. We'll see you guys next week for episode 100 with, we'll have like fucking... I don't know, Superman on here or something.
Like that. No idea. Nice.
We're having Jim Caviezel,
episode 100. All right, guys. Boy. See you next week.
See you next week.
Yeah.
Bye.
I think it's going to be a fun episode. If you didn't get to go to PAX this year, you can kind of live vicariously through our PAX East mm-hmm. adventures.
Indeed.
And what are those adventures?
Oh, sorry. right. How do we do this again? It's been a while.
It's been a little while.
Yeah. So that's where I come in and say today on the podcast –